Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday night in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks, California. This is LA Talk Radio, and this is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, sitting in studio tonight, finally with my co-host, Bobby Jean Bell.
I'm back!
And, of course, her husband, Jim, who is over there. He's not even holding up the wall anymore. He's got his own chair, his own headphones. He's
He'll
a happy guy.
He'll start talking if we, you know, encourage him.
He is, and you're finally able to come in the studio.
Oh, my gosh. I have had whatever has been going on around the country. I was out for like three weeks.
It's been bad. I mean, I was right on the cusp for a couple times, and I managed to power through. But that's I wasn't going to get sick. I just said, to hell with that. I'm not going to get sick. So, The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, the nice folks at Black Dog. If you're a new writer or a writer that's kind of confused about where to go and how to get things published, talk to us at Black Dog Publishing. The number there is 805-795-3165, and they'll surely help you walk your way through it. And, of course, from Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California, and the number is
661-347-9700. Yay.
Yay.
He's giving me the thumbs up, so I got it right.
And what do you have, Bobby?
Oh, we have everything you could possibly need. So check us out at www.scvoutwest.com, and you'll see clothing and boots and hats and books and CDs and jewelry and you name it, we got it or we'll get it.
Cool beans. And, of course, and we would be remiss, of course, if we did not have our favorite sponsor, Target Freight Management.
We mention Target Freight Management every show, and we mention that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload gets your freight there every time on time? No muss, no fuss at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line. Call today at 1-844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra just for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Call Target Freight Management.
Not all them.
I know. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight today at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com. Call today. You won't be sorry you did, and we thank them for sponsoring this show.
We absolutely do. I just had lunch with Mike last week. And
I knew it.
Oh, yeah. They're just such nice people. Before we get started tonight, I want to read a foreword to a book. And this foreword, the author of this foreword happens to be at the bottom of this foreword. But I'm gonna read this foreword to you. And this is from a book called End of Line. And the foreword reads, "A cowboy's trail to the end of line in New Mexico territory is oft wrought with hardship. Western author Jim Christina writes from his heart as if he has experienced these same journeys. His mastery of description puts the reader in the saddle alongside the characters through rural and urban landscapes alike. Personally, growing up with the Western genre, I have always had a longing for stories set in the historic West. As a writer and filmmaker, I have been fortunate enough to become friends with many chronologically advanced Western... I love chronologically advanced. Thanks, Eric. Kiss you. Who have been movie cowboys, stuntmen, and old-school Texas cattlemen. Through their many struggles with life, love, and responsibility, they forged reputations that ring true with this Old West tale. Mr. Christina communicates how the older generation works at what they do best and look on with fond hindsight as the new guard fills their boot trail. The many classic characters from End of Line will resonate with any climate of a changing frontier. Taking place in West Texas and then New Mexico, former Texas Ranger Caleb Stringfeld is a product of his times. Hard men do the unenviable tasks of survival and keep a semblance of law and order in a frontier rife with outlaws, bandits, and dispossessed natives. He begins to tire of his chosen path, but as the watch hands of a timepiece constantly circle, his choices remain just as predictable. A need of his special skills calls him to the town of End of Line, but his sense of duty is what keeps him there to face the challenge. Luckily for him, old acquaintances from years past are also headed to this small town on the edge of nowhere. With the family of Morgans pushing the line of lawlessness in town, the consequences of their deeds come to a head. The bad seeds fake off with men of action who know their work when it comes to handling a gun and hard cases. Written in a fun, easygoing style, you'll enjoy your time saddled up with these experienced men of the West and accompanying them on their journey to End of Line. That's Eric funny. H. Heisner, author of T.H. Elkman, actor, screenwriter, living historian. And he wrote this from San Antonio, Texas in January of this year. Thank you so much, Eric.
That is great. So tell us about End of Line.
End of Line is about an aging gunfighter that is a traveling marshal. It goes from town to town and cleans up cow towns and mining towns. And this one happens to be a mining town that's on the verge of death. And this is his last stop because he's sick. And he knows it's his last stop. And he wanted to keep going, but his honor and his duty and his commitment to his word keeps him there.
Is this a continuation of your series? Do you have any reoccurring characters?
It is. Or? It is. Yes. Stryker. Okay. Stryker shows up. Okay. Bountiful Jim. Kieran. Buck. Okay. Shows up. And
Is he a new character, or has he been in?
No, he's never been in a book before. Okay. This is a standalone for Caleb Stringfeld. And there's a new character that I introduced. His name is Lewis Kennedy. He's a black. Veteran of the Grand Contraband Army, Lincoln's Grand Contraband Army, and lost his leg at the Battle of the Wilderness in 1864. And his family, and they have a ranch right outside of End of Line. So it's a great story. It's a great read. It will be available probably March. Definitely for the Cowboy Festival in April.
Cool.
And I'm looking forward to having this book on sale. As soon as we get done with the editing and the proofreading, it will be available.
Congratulations. That's so
Thank
exciting.
You. And it's a good time to bring up the point that I just started a new book called Jonah Blue. Great story.
You just started a new book?
Yeah. Yes.
You started writing another new book?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you just started reading a book or you started.
No.
This is a new.
This one came to me in a dream.
Oh, my gosh.
Called Jonah Blue.
We need to schedule you in as a guest.
I know, again, huh?
I don't think we have an opening until when, like
well, you
September?
Know what? We're waiting on Henry, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest tonight. Oh, there he is right there. Look at that. Henry, are you there? Oh, here we go again.
We know Henry's there.
Henry, we know you're here. Okay, let me see which one is Henry. Henry is here. Let me merge calls.
Henry's going to be with us at the Buckaroo Bookshop at
he
the Santa
Cruz
Cowboy Festival.
Merge calls. There we go. Okay, John, do we still have you? Oh, I don't have anybody now.
Oh, no.
Oh, crap. Oops.
Live radio.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, wait a minute. Call on hold. No, we want the call. Resume call. Merge calls. Resume call. John, you're there, right? John?
Uh-oh. John, can you call back in if you can hear us?
Wow, we just lost everybody. Here we go. That's Henry. Hi, Henry. Well, what? Hello.
Hello.
Oh, there you are.
There's Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hello. Wow.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you just fine.
John, can you hear us?
So we lost John.
No, I hope we didn't lose John.
I don't hear
Resume
John.
Resume call. Merge calls. John, are you there? John Hagenberger. No?
Okay.
Okay. Okay, Henry. Let's go. Let's get at this quick so we can get John back.
You betcha.
What's up, okay. Henry?
I'll make it quick. I've got a lot of interesting stuff coming to the next roundup.
Mm-hmm.
I've got good news about upcoming shows. I've just seen the first two episodes of AMC's new Western series, The Sun, which is dynamite. It stars Pierce Brosnan and Jacob Laughlin, the very talented young man who played Neckbone in Mud, and he was in Texas Rising, and he was a regular in Justified. And he and Brosnan are playing the same character in this show, Eli McCullough, at different times in his life.
Oh.
It's terrific stuff from the wonderful book by Philip Meyer. Now, are you folks familiar with Travis Fimmel?
Travis Fimmel.
He's an actor.
Yeah, he was doing Vikings, right?
Of Vikings and in the Warcraft movie.
He was Ragnar Lothbrok in Vikings.
I am sure you're right. I've never seen it.
Great show.
But I know he's
on the History Channel.
Got a big following from there. And a few years ago, when there was going to be a feature based on The Big Valley, he was going to play Heath. And Lee Majors was going to play his dad, the never-seen Tom Barkley. But unfortunately, that project got shut down when the director went to jail for scamming Massachusetts out of money on another film.
Ah.
But now Travis will be playing Wyatt Earp on a new anthology series for the History Channel.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, and he wrote the episode and is producing the series.
Excellent.
Now, have you folks heard anything about The Hero from Sundance?
No.
This is a new Sam Elliott movie, and he stars as, of all things, an aging Western actor coming to terms with his life, and he co-stars with his beautiful bride, Catherine Ross.
Uh-huh.
Now, I haven't seen any of this yet, but the word of mouth is terrific. I've seen people saying it is the role of his career.
Really?
Yeah. That's as I say, I can't vouch for that, but I'm excited about it and hope it's true.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I'll be reviewing a very interesting Civil War film that slipped through the cracks last year, Free State of Jones.
Great movie.
Oh, so you've seen it.
I have. Yeah, I actually have the Blu-ray.
Excellent. Because, of course, for the folks who don't know, Matthew McConaughey is a Confederate deserter who leads a rebellion in Mississippi and tries to create his own government.
Right.
Based on, forgive the phrase, actual events.
As close as possible.
I feel ashamed saying that anymore because usually it means a bunch of lies.
Absolutely.
You know, on a serious note, a few weeks ago, fans of Gunsmoke lost a very talented man who viewers probably aren't that familiar with because he was behind the scenes. But Ron Hontanner wrote a couple of episodes, and then he became a producer and worked in various producer capacities on more than 150 episodes. And so I'll be writing about his career and about his very fine novel, The Shadow of the Hawk.
Oh, okay.
And please pick up the February True West and read my article featuring actress Constance Towers' memories of working with John Ford on The Horse Soldiers with John Wayne and William Holden.
Right.
And dare I say, you can read all about that and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
God, I love it when you get it right, Henry. I just love it.
we're
always sitting here with bated breath going, is he going to make it? All right, my friend, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Great talking to you.
Well, talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye, Henry.
Bye, Henry.
Bye-bye. Now let's see if we can get Hegenberger back.
Do you have the number?
I do.
Okay.
It's right here. let me see. Call. Here we go. Call. 614.
Right? Don't say it on the air.
Oh, I know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we...
Maybe he wants us to. I mean, you never know.
Give me the area code, gosh. And you have to guess the next seven.
That's right. The area code is 614. Where is John Hegenberger? There he is.
Hello.
Hello.
Don't you just hate it when we hang up on you?
I'm calling in on the writer's block line right now on 4929. I want to talk to John Hegenberger.
Oh, well, that's exactly what is happening. Incidentally, if you do want to call and talk to John Hegenberger, the number here is 818-602-4929. And that comes you right into the studio when we can, maybe we can
figure out how to merge
maybe we can't.
maybe you guys got hit by lightning or something.
No, we got hit by Christina.
Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah.
Hey, I dug out, you know what I found today? I found out a review that you wrote for The Return, Mr. Hagenberger.
I did.
Oh, that he
you
wrote
did.
For your book, The Return.
Yes.
Oh.
The title of his review, this is going to take all of 3 seconds. The title of the review is Ride the Mean Trails in This Noirish Western.
Yep.
This, then, is a killer Western. The Hunter, Striker, Bountiful Jim are all hard, tough, and well-crafted characters. You can taste the grit in The Return. Epic entertainment.
That pretty much...
That was it.
That well, you know
yeah.
what?
That
you, that would make you should make you get that book and want to...
Read it.
Read it.
Because and, it's all of that and more.
All of that and more. Yeah.
We have on the line with us, finally... an old guest of the Writer's Block and a truly one of our fondest guests and one of our favorites, John Hagenberger, and he has written. Geez, I don't know how
He's
many
written,
books you've written.
Got a lot.
How many books
with
have
more
you
to
written,
come,
John?
With more to come.
14.
That's it. God, it seems like
yeah.
It seems like you're. But it seems like all I ever see is pictures of you at a book signing with a new book.
But it's across all genres. It's across several different.
You
genres.
Do.
So
I mean,
think
you're,
it feels
you cross
like
everything.
It's a bigger body of work because it's across so many genres.
Let's
I
go ahead.
I want to be a pulp writer.
You're going to be
yeah,
a pulp writer.
A pulp writer, yeah,
yeah.
Because that's tell us about pulp. What that means. To be
oh,
a pulp
I'm sorry.
Writer.
Well, no. Back in the day, the pulp magazines used to be on the news rack. There would be romance pulps and Western pulps and planet science fiction pulps and murder mystery pulps, I guess you call them,
yep.
Black Mask, things like that. And a really good pulp writer could write all that stuff. And there were surprisingly, at least 100 who just crossed all over the place. They just wrote any crazy stuff that came to mind and got it published, and that's kind of what I want to do.
We know one.
Not restricted.
We actually interviewed a gentleman, Gary Phillips, last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, last year.
Oh,
before.
I know Gary.
Yeah.
And Gary's a really good guy. He does Asian pulp, actually, a lot of Asian pulp. And I was at the Phoenix airport last week, and ran into a black cowboy, and I just really wanted to know where he got his hat. And he said, well, he got his hat from this place in the valley, and he asked me what I did, and I said, well, I have a radio show on, and he is, you know, do you who would interview? I said, well, we interview writers, and he goes, do you do pulp? And I said, yeah, we do pulp. I mean, we interviewed a writer that's pulp. He goes, I have a friend that's a pulp writer. And I said, well, who is your friend?
He said, Gary Phillips.
He said, Gary Phillips.
Yeah, well, but this guy here in L.A.
This guy is a real deal cowboy.
Yeah,
I mean, he really, truly was.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah.
And they were called...
Gary is the president of Private Eye Writers of America.
Oh, is he?
Oh.
I did not know that.
Yep.
And the term pulp also comes really from the inexpensive quality of the paper, right? That a lot of these were published on initially. I mean, that's kind of where that word comes from.
Yep, there used to be the pulp magazines, which were just rag newspaper, like almost like newsprint newspaper. Mm-hmm. And then there were the slick magazines; those were the slick paper, the rotary reviewer paper, Life magazine, Time magazine,
right.
And the cheap stuff was the pulps, and they'd sell for a dime. There'd be 6-7 stories in every issue, and there'd probably be like 30 pulps published every week.
Right.
So anybody tells you there's a lot of stuff being published these days because of independent publishing and self-publishing and stuff like that, it is really not much more today than there was back in the 30s when all the pulps were coming out all over the place, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pulp magazines were the ones you wanted to take to the privy. You never wanted to take the slick magazines. Oh, no. Hey, before we get into anything else, let's talk about your new book, Stormfall. I finished it today.
Me too.
And what a romp that story is.
You just take us. Oh, my gosh. We start out with a murder, we think, in the prologue. And we don't quite know how that's going to get connected.
Yeah.
And then you have us with, of course, we're in Los Angeles with our star guy, with Stan Wade. Next thing we know, we're with John Ford, and then we're with John Wayne, and then we're...
In Brackettville, Texas.
Brackettville, Texas.
And then Mexico.
Yeah, you have us all over the place, as usual. You fill it with cameos. Again, I started writing down the names
of... Oh, you can't write them all down.
You can't know I gave up, you know?
Oh, this sounds like a good book.
Oh, it's a great book.
We happen to know the author.
So I'm curious, and we don't really want to do any spoiler alerts necessarily, but there is a murder that takes place, and it happens on the appears to happen on the set of The Alamo during the filming of John Wayne's, of course, film, The Alamo. Was there a murder?
Oh, no, that's a real murder.
That is a real murder.
We were wondering.
Because you mostly do real, you know, real things, but we also know you, you know, you... poetic license.
Right.
A lot of people have written fascinating stories about murder mysteries and private eyes and police procedurals in Hollywood during the making of this movie or that movie or whatever. But this was the only murder that I came across that actually did take place during the filming of a movie. And it took place during the filming of The Alamo. And John Wayne had to leave production on the film to go in and give testimony.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, you as Jim said, it's a romp. That's the best way to describe this book. And you fill it with a good, good guys and dastardly guys. We've got a very famous science fiction writer that you introduce. Who's that character?
That is a science fiction writer.
Philip K. Dick.
Philip K. Dick.
Phil Dick, right?
Yeah, and how... Jim and I both were trying to remember how he got introduced into the book. It's like all of a sudden there he is with Stan, and neither of us could remember how you introduced him.
Yeah, he was in a hotel room or someplace.
Yeah.
Just happened to be there.
Yeah.
The guy that causes the murder in Texas during the film of The Alamo,
right?
In my book, he's under the influence of a drug, which is an LSD derivative, because that's about the time when the government and other people were first starting to fiddle around with LSD. And as a result, they tracked the fellow who caused the LSD to get spread back to San Francisco. So they're doing research trying to find out what the heck is this LSD stuff and where do I go to find somebody that might maybe has it. So they go to the library and they bump into this guy at the library who's also doing some research.
Because
you know how the stories of Philip K. Dick are, where some guy wakes up from a dream and realizes he has a clone from another dimension that's an evil twin that time traveled back to... I mean, they just get really crazy, wacky stuff, you know? So that's how they run into Phil K. Dick. He's doing LSD research. And they need somebody to kind of help them figure out where things are in San Francisco, so he becomes sort of a sidekick.
Right, right.
Oh, and you describe San Francisco so... between the weather and the hilly streets and down at the water. And I just felt like, oh, my gosh, I've only been there once and you nailed it, you know?
Yep.
Oh, I love doing that kind of travel around stuff. I found two or three spots that I definitely wanted to make sure I got into the book. And legitimately, the story twisted around enough that, yeah, they all fit right in. We go over to Yerba Buena Island. Sutro Bath. What else was it? Oh, Lefty O'Doul's restaurant.
Right. Lefty O'Doul's.
And Haight Ashbury, where they run into Allen Ginsberg.
Right, right, right.
And the famous cemetery. You give us. We're back when we're back to L.A. We're in the famous the cemetery that's next to. Is it next to Paramount Studio? Wait. Hollywood.
Forever.
This is where I stopped writing things down. You know. but there's that important scene in that cemetery, and it's so fun because you point out some of the people that are there, and that it will be the resting place for some people that haven't passed on yet.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
You're thinking Clifton Webb?
Yes. Clifton Webb, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I'll tell you a little story about that, because I had him in there already interred, and one of my readers, actually Terrence Flaherty, read the manuscript, and he says, no, Clifton Webb didn't die until 1966. And I went, so we caught it on the last go-around on edits.
Ah.
Right, because it takes place in 59.
Right.
And early on, there's a little vignette with Roy Rogers and Gene Autry, and I began thinking about Gene's career, and I'm like, is Gene even still doing kind of these types of personal appearances in 59? He's kind of, let's see, when does he get the Angels? Because he starts to, you know, you know, it's just so fun.
I know, Bobby, you like to check up on me. Last time we talked, you saw a scene where Stan was a stuntman in 1950 on a film, and you checked, like, is that really a movie?
Yes.
And is that really the director of that movie? And
she'll do that to you.
Well, it just makes it.
Fact-checked.
Yeah, it just makes it all the more. I would recommend as a reader, you know, is keep the internet handy because you're going to see a name and you'll just for fun.
I know, just Google.
Yeah. Now the doctor that you have involved with LSD. Now I was not able to find that guy's name was a real name.
That's a fictional character.
Dr. V, right?
Dr. Z. Doesn't that sound like a fictional
character? Yeah. Z.
Yeah.
Zachariah.
But what I really liked about that was the idea of, here we have a Mexican political group that is sitting there saying, you know, we kind of like to see what we can do to get back parts of Texas and New Mexico and Arizona and just take back half the United States if we could, you know.
Yeah.
This is before we had Donald Trump in the wall.
Yeah, when did you write? When we talked last time, you did talk about that you had a lot of manuscripts that you had just, you know, kind of had over the years, and you've begun to take them out, polish them up, and get them out there. When did you actually write this one?
This one was just last year.
Okay, so was this one that you had written previously, or is this a new?
No.
Okay.
No. All this Dan Waite stuff is fresh, new.
Okay.
And going, you know, marching forward in time, slowly but surely. The other Western that I wrote, that's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
My science fiction stuff is, I'm going to say, half new. And my other Private Eye series is, I guess, half new as well, meaning that there are three books, and I had a pretty well-developed manuscript for about one and a half of them. A couple years ago, and then I added a third book to it to make a trilogy, and you know, so yeah, I did start out with some stuff that I had previously written about a decade or so back.
Sure.
But out of the 14 books, I think maybe four of them come from the trunk, and all the other 10 are brand new, fresh.
Oh, wow.
Got it.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, John, that I've got somewhat of a soft spot in my heart for Stan Waite. Because Stan Waite
Wonderful.
Has a soft spot on his head. That guy gets clumped on the head more than anyone else I've ever read.
He got hit with rubber bullets?
I mean, he got hit with everything.
I'm thinking, no, he's just shot him in both legs, and then it's rubber bullets.
He goes, are the bruises going to be bigger than my eyes?
Yeah, and the two black eyes. He has the two black eyes. He really gets beat up in this.
Because he had the two black eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets beat up in this book a lot. Yeah, and drugged. I mean, you know, this
between LSD and getting beat up, it's like don't turn the page because it's just going to be another thunkin'.
Well, and you give us a kind of a chilling scene with Susie Sunset, and I guess he's still under the influence of
when he's in her apartment,
under the influence. So
that's like flashback, PTSD kind of
right.
a thing.
Yeah. It's just great,
a great read, and to our listeners, if you haven't read any Stan Waite, make sure that you pick up a Stan Waite novel because they are so much fun to read. I mean, go ahead.
Did I tell you guys that I won the comedy award for the Killer Nashville convention this year?
No.
I had a note about that. Good, tell us about that.
Did you? Okay. Yeah, well, I didn't really think of myself as writing comedy originally, okay? And then I won an award for the most humorous mystery. And I went back and reread the book, and I went like, yeah, I guess I am writing a lot of jokey stuff here, you know? So I'm going with that. We're going to do more and more of that. Have a good time.
Good. Well, you should.
Well, I felt that I have a smile on my face most of the time
I know,
that
huh?
I'm reading, you know, because it's enjoyable. It's thought-provoking in, like, wow, he just did John Kennedy, and he made a comment about Marilyn Monroe.
I know. I remember Peter Lawford's bee shouts.
Yeah, it was just different things where he,
well, Kennedy, that senator from Massachusetts is down there with her, too.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He gave us a lot of very fun, I wonder who he's describing, like, with the little George Bush.
Yeah.
I wonder, that must be the Bush family he's writing about right now.
Yeah. You know, and what you do in L.A. is that for people who weren't around in the mm-hmm. 50s in Los Angeles, you give us a historical
Absolutely.
Trip down the timeline. You take us to places that haven't been around in a long time or are still there.
Right.
But it's just wonderful.
Was this the one with the Capitol Records Tower?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And I've only lived out here since 91. Jim's lived out here a lot longer.
Yeah.
We always talk about traffic out here. I thought it was very interesting that right in the beginning of the book, he's complaining about traffic. I didn't know that in 59 there was still traffic challenges here.
Yeah. And smog.
Well, and smog, much more so than now.
He hates traffic. He hates wait. He's very impatient kind of a character. And, the smog and his sinuses and stuff. So all in all, he just hates traffic.
Well, he's got a great car, though, a 59 Thunderbird. Oh, that's my dream car.
I know. Every time we write about the car, I think of you, and I think, I wonder if Jim Christina is catching anything that is not true.
I love
about
that car.
About that car.
Well, that's the one he got from Walt.
Right.
When they
blew up his Kaiser.
Blown up. Yeah. So I like to progress a little further, you know, into the future kind of thing. And you're right about the Kennedys. The next book up, there's bound to be some Kennedy stuff going on in there. But,
okay.
You know, there's going to be much, much more than just that. I mean, Kennedys have been kind of worked pretty heavily. So, well, we have to have it involved. But at the same time, we've got to have other things going on, too.
Right.
And we will.
Now, Bobby, you had mentioned something about you wanted to. Oh, yes, I remember. It was the Western anthologies.
Yes.
How many writers do you have working on that? And now I understand you have how many books out in the Western series?
Yeah, I wanted to just talk about Blaze and your book that you wrote for Blaze. You had talked about a little bit on the last show, but now it's out. And I notice that even book 15, which you didn't write, but it's going to be out February 6th, and I see Create Place seems to be who's behind this. Can you tell us a little bit about this series and then how you got connected to it?
Sure. Steve Mertz came up with the idea of a husband and wife gunslinger back in the Old West and started the series up. They're published by Rough Edges Press, which is owned and operated by Jim Reasoner.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim had published a couple of my science fiction books and two of my Elliot Cross Private Eye novels and offered me the opportunity between the two of them to come on board if I wanted to and write one of the books in the series. And I wrote, I think it's book 13. No, it's book 12. I got
book 12.
It here now.
Yeah, you book 12.
And guess what? There's a guy in that book, a colonel in the Army named Wade.
Would it be a relative?
Wade must be. Everything I have written connects up. Out of those 14 books, for instance, there's a connection somehow. Those science fiction novels in the future, there's somebody's great-great-grandson. Like Elliot Cross's mm-hmm. or Stan Wade's great-great-grandson, somehow doing a walk-on or something.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'll do a time travel story from the future, and they'll come back mm-hmm. to 1959. I don't know yet. Or better yet, maybe I could team up the two PIs.
Now that would be fun.
That would be fun, yeah. Maybe you should team them up with like Sherlock Holmes and take them into a whole other time period.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a thriller. It hasn't sold yet. I just started sending it out. And it's more like a Clive Cussler. And it's a band of thieves who are traveling around the world contemporary today. And they're searching for the parts of an artifact, an ancient artifact. You put it together, and you get some important information that you need to save the world from some terrible threat. So two of the characters are, one character is named Cross and another one's named Wade. And you can see the potential for those two characters in the Today novel, having had relatives back in 1988 for Elliot Cross or 1959 for Stan Wade. So I linked that into the universe as well. So I'm building a universe here.
Apparently.
Tapestry.
So how do you keep track of I know as the writer I would imagine this is just all always in your head, but in order to weave things together and how do you remember what you've written?
I don't. A lot of times. That's what's scary. But you mean like for those kind of linking up between books and things?
Like you have to go back to a book and go, oh, what did I? Yeah, Jim Christina's going. Yeah,
me too.
Yeah.
It hasn't gotten so detailed that I really had to sweat it. In other words, I would have a character, like I said about Bloody Wyoming, the Blaze novel.
Mm-hmm.
I would just have a character in there. Who probably is the great-grandfather of Stan Wade. But it's a minor enough character that there's not enough detail for me to really have to really, really worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I could have named this particular Army colonel at Fort Steele, Christina or Jones or whatever,
Or Bell.
But I decided, wait a minute, this is an opportunity.
Yeah.
But keep it under control, and then you can move forward with the real story that you're telling. And then you've, put in your little Easter egg or your nugget of fun stuff. Sometimes that's what it takes to keep going, too. You get to a tough part of the story that, I don't know about you, when you're writing, Jim, do you write linear, like, from page one all the way to the end, or do you find yourself occasionally writing a whole big scene that, okay, now I got to go back and write two more scenes in between to fill in the gap kind of a thing,
I do both.
But when I do a lot of that filling in the gap stuff, that's when it's the hardest kind of writing. And usually when I'm doing the hardest kind of writing, I try to find any trick that I can do to make the process as pleasurable as possible,
right,
for myself, And that's when some of these wacky ideas kind of come into the story. And sometimes I edit them back out again because they were just too crazy, But it got me the whatever number 25 pages, that I wanted.
There you go.
Week.
There you go. I have whole books come in dreams. So there you go.
Yeah, that's what I heard you were saying that earlier. Yeah, you dreamt this whole new novel you got coming.
Yeah, it just came to me in a dream.
I wish my dreams were
productive
like that.
Funny, I had a dream myself, and I thought, oh, I'm going to write that down. This is about a week ago.
Yeah.
Now I have no clue. I should have written it down.
But this one wouldn't go away.
We've heard this. I've heard it from authors and songwriters and poets. There's a writer named Robin Hutton who wrote a fabulous nonfiction book about Sergeant Reckless, who was a very important horse during the
World War I, Korean War. He's a Marine.
And we interviewed her on another radio show that I'm on, and that book came to her in a dream that would not let her go. And it really sort of started like a horse in a closet. I mean, the dream, it was absolutely fascinating.
Right.
And that book has changed her life. It has brought Sergeant Reckless in as a monument now, going up at military bases on racehorse tracks all over the country. And she kind of didn't listen to that dream, and it would not let her alone. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah,
it happens.
Yeah. So
funny. I was just talking with another writer last Saturday, and found out that she has a book out, and she said that she woke up with the key point of the whole book just came to her in a dream, and it isn't like you get the whole book and you start writing on page one, but the key concept was so fresh and exciting she couldn't put the pencil down. She had to go write the book, and she did. A lot of that goes around. I honestly haven't had a lot of that.
Yeah, well, I was
I'm living a dream right now and don't know it.
Well, you really are, John, and because you're, of course, on our show.
Well, you know what? That's a little
segue.
When I was researching Philip Dick, not actually, I'm embarrassed to say I didn't know about him, I found these three great quotes. Don't try to solve serious matters in the middle of the night was something he said, and that really spoke to me. And what you just made reference to, reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away. It's still, reality is still there.
Yep.
And it is sometimes an appropriate response to reality to go insane.
Well, I strongly suspect that Philip Dick was insane.
Oh, I don't know. He's awfully creative. He's more creative than I am.
Oh, he was pretty prolific.
Yeah.
Which is, incidentally, a word I'll never put in one of my books.
Prolific?
Prolific.
No, it's an action.
I remember reading all his stuff back in college, and it was pretty trippy. But what really got to me from his style of writing, some way or other, he agonizes on the page the same way I guess I do in reality. So when I read his stories, his characters have concerns about what's happening, and they immediately start thinking of the worst possible thing that could happen next. And that's the way I guess I am, to the point where I would read his books and I'd say, this guy's like reading my mind. I figured the next thing he would happen to his character was whatever, and you know, I turn the page and that's exactly what that character, that's what happened, you know. So that was a little spacey in itself.
Well, I was glad you introduced him to me, because I would like to read some things of his, especially since
Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, especially since I have to admit that I was ignorant of him.
See if you can find a copy of A Man in the High Castle. I mean, is
yes.
Big deal.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But try for Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said. That too is an excellent book.
Okay, great.
And it's an alternate reality kind of situation. At times you don't know if this is really happening or if the guy's imagining it. And another one that's fun is Ubik.
Oh, okay.
Ubik. Try all three of those.
Ubik?
And if you're still sane...
Well, you know, we've said this before, and we have to read a book a week.
Yes.
And oft times, you know, we're still reading it when we hit the studio.
Yes, not much sleep for us.
No, and you know, you do need a day off from opening a book or
you
a PDF. Or,
do you really?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And, reading just because for reading's sake... It gets a little difficult.
Yeah. Now, John, you know, we do ask this question every week, and you have indulged us in the past, but we could have new listeners tonight that haven't heard your answer.
Or you could
before.
Have a new answer.
Or you could have a new answer. Exactly. It's been almost a year since we've chatted with you. So do you ever experience writer's block?
Well, the old answer was I get writer's shock.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yes.
Which was something crazy happens on the next page that I was not expecting. But recently, I'm not so sure if I understand what the whole idea of writer's block is, but I tend to think it means you just cannot figure out how to, like, write yourself out of a corner.
Right. Where do I go from here?
I don't have that problem either, but I have what my version of writer's block, which is... I got like four things going at once, and I can't decide which one to write right now.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So I will be reading something by some other author, and I'll be inspired to dash over and start working on Project A. And I didn't even know I was going to do that when I woke up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll read something maybe by somebody else, and that'll inspire me. I'll dash over and write book number four of some other series. And that might be writer's block. Other authors, I think, probably sit down one project at a time and go through kind of from beginning to end. But I jump around a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm. You also
maybe
had...
There's
Maybe those
pulp writers used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You also had made a comment recommendation is write every day and read every night.
Oh, yeah, but that I stole that.
That's because you're from Ohio.
Well, it's still good advice.
That's from Stephen King. And another thing that he said that I'm just starting to absolutely agree with was read, don't watch TV.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that, although I work in front of the TV. It's sort of like background music
for me.
Yeah,
we all do. I can sit right in front of the TV.
But I agree with you. We have gotten so visual where we have to be every moment almost,
right.
Whether you're watching TV or you're playing a video game or something, where that time could be so spent on quality, like
well, yeah, and then you know your TV starts getting dim, you just buy a bigger TV.
Well, that's
you know,
or a new pair of eyes.
That's how it is.
I agree with you. I think we're losing, even though things more and more things seem to be published, and there's such a wide availability of what to read.
Yeah.
We have so many things that fragment our days. If you're big into social media, and you know, just the things that. We didn't have to have all those options back in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Right.
And now we just have so many things that can grab our attention, and you really have to make reading like a priority.
Right.
Yeah, and this sounds a little bit like, you know, a plug for the libraries. But honestly, what's occurred for me is the idea that the actual written word has its own kind of magic,
mm-hmm.
Just like music. Has its own kind of magic, and when you watch television, you're really not seeing the syntax or the word choice, or you might be getting the dialogue, but you're not getting the descriptive phrases.
Right.
So the poetic. I mean, there's this whole aspects to the written word that you don't get to experience. It would be like somebody just said, "Okay, you're not allowed to listen to music anymore." You go, whoa, that's important, you know. And I think we may have trapped ourselves quite often with, we're not reading anymore, and
we
don't even recognize that the trap we put ourselves in.
Well, you know, in TV, your imagination is catching what they want you to see.
Mm-hmm.
Your imagination is like put to sleep because you don't need it.
That's right. And one of the things we mentioned just even earlier in talking to you tonight, when I talked about San Francisco and I felt like I was there, you capture with your word phrases the temperature, the grit in the air, you give us and let our imaginations envelop us in it in a way that the visual can't really do.
Right.
It can attempt to do, but it doesn't do it in the same way.
Right. Right.
Yep.
Hey, I hate to hurry you, John, but we're about out of time. So why don't you tell our listeners tell them where they can find you, your email address and Twitter,
Facebook and all that good stuff.
Well, yeah, it's pretty easy. It's just kind of my name. Once you've got the John Hagenberger part, the rest of it's, add a .com to it, and you're at my webpage.
There you go.
Put it on Facebook, and up will come my page, and I guess you'll see a link there to Stan Wade's page.
Right.
There's a Twitter handle, which is just my first initial and then the seven letters of my last name, so it's J. Higginby. There's, the Amazon page. You type it in there, and you'll see all my books, the audio versions and the anthologies that I've contributed to, and Goodreads, the same kind of stuff. You got to type in my name kind of thing, So I made it pretty dumb and simple, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
As long as you spell the name right.
Yeah, yeah. And that would be H-E-G-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R. Hagenberger.
Right. They're two G's, but not side by side.
Okay, John. Hey, thanks for coming on the air with us again. And you know what? Let's not wait another year. I mean, we have some openings after July. So get a hold of the bookie. You got something coming out. I'm sure she'll plug you in somewhere.
Oh, fine.
We always love to have you, and you're always welcome to call in and just say hi.
Keep up with what's happening. Call us when you have another release.
And I did send you a coffee mug, correct?
Thanks. Oh, no. I was going to ask you about that. The last time we were on the line, I forgot, because later on, you gave a coffee mug to somebody, and I went, hey, I didn't get a coffee mug.
Are you lying to me? I can go back and check my records. I didn't get you one?
No, but that's okay. I'm
no,
not
no, 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 no. I mean, I'll,
I'm just
I will.
Glad you remembered it.
I will. That's I will. Great. Actually, we send one to everybody that we that are calling. So I will make sure that I get one on the road to you this weekend.
Thanks, pal.
And you're gonna love it because it's a great mug.
It
just
is.
Take a picture of your mug with the mug and put it on Facebook.
And put it on our Facebook page.
There you go.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
On your book, Jim.
I'm sorry.
Best of luck on your book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Keep your writing. Keep on going.
I wouldn't stop.
That was a true review that I gave you.
Oh, thank you. I kind of figured you'd like it because it was a little out there.
Hmm. And, Bobby, I'm going to need a cowboy hat and some shirts and stuff here pretty soon.
And
so
spurs.
Oh, my gosh. We would love to help you out with that, John. Love to
Thanks.
Help you out with that. Yep.
Okay, we got to go,
okay.
bud.
Thank you.
Thanks. We'll be talking soon. Okay, John.
Keep writing.
Keep writing. Thanks. That's right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. John Eggenberger, always a great guest.
Oh, my gosh.
Always
so much
a great
fun.
Guest.
That book was so much fun.
So much. And, you know, all of his Stan Wade. And his other stuff, too, is great.
I would love to have a chance to read the other things.
Yeah.
I want to read the Western. And
yeah,
I want
I
to read
do.
The Elliot Cross. And
well,
I
you know, we can always trade them back and forth.
I know.
Because now, you know, I'm not going to be working that much.
I know.
So
you announced some very significant news when we...
Yes, but I will make it...
Yeah,
I will announce it on the air next week.
I understand. Yeah.
So, thanks again for another wonderful Thursday night.
Great to be back.
To make the writer's block actually huge. And we really appreciate it. And this is another Thursday that's just gone by like... just zoom. It has passed. So we thank everybody for listening. We certainly do thank Mr. John Eggenberger for joining us tonight. And with that, and Henry.
And God, and Henry.
And Henry Park.
Yep.
And with that being said, this is the Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina. This is Bobby Gene Bell over here. And you are listening to LA Talk Radio.